The Hurling Pod on Off the Ball.
I'm looking for a forward. I'd love to have skill, I'd love to have pace, and I'd love to have size. What the Cork Six forwards have is they've all those three things in abundance in different areas.
Free wherever you get your podcast. The Hurling Pod on Off the Ball.
I'm looking for a forward. I'd love to have skill, I'd love to have pace, and I'd love to have size. What the Cork Six forwards have is they've all those three things in abundance in different areas.
Free wherever you get your podcast.
The Sunday Papers on Off the Ball.
And you're welcome to the Sunday Papers, you on Off the Ball. John Duggan with you today, sitting in for Adrian Barry. We're joined in the studio by the former Irish international rugby player Jackie Shields and the Irish Daily Mail sports journalist Philip Lanigan. Jackie and Philip, happy Sunday.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Day for ice creams and 99s, even though I was hearing on the radio on the way in, there's a shortage, supposedly.
There's always something in this country that's wrong, isn't there? Even when we have a beautiful, glorious day. I'm just going to go through the back pages, folks, before we get into the chat. And we have the Irish Daily Mail, your paper, Philip, the back page, the sports section. Different class. Magical Clifford steals the show for Kerry as Tyrone are swatted aside. 22 minutes, Tyrone, without scoring yesterday. Kerry 120, Tyrone 17 points. A champion Taylor mulling over a future Katie Taylor after a win again over Amanda Serrano in New York over the weekend. We've got the Sunday Times. Magic man. Genius Clifford leads Kerry into All-Ireland final after beating Tyrone. And Lions call up George after injury blows to Cowan Dickey and Ringrose. Gary Ringrose out of the first test. We've got the Sunday Independent Sport. Kerry's kicking king, David Clifford, on fire as Kingdom turn up the heat to scorch Tyrone. So the main man, David Clifford, yesterday 1-9 in that performance. O'Connor hails team's battle after slow starts. Jack O'Connor leading Kerry into an eighth All-Ireland final. Kerry winners 3 years ago. Play Donegal or me to meet at 4 o'clock. We have the back of the Sunday World Sport. Golden Wonder, incredible Clifford rules for Kingdom to deliver reality trek for Tyrone. And Pat Spillane, Donegal have to win Sam now. And McIlroy's major boost. So McIlroy, Rory McIlroy, playing well at the Scottish Open and in a share of the 54-hole lead going into the final round of the Renaissance Club ahead of the Open at Royal Portrush, which begins on Thursday. PSG long way from becoming Gaelic greats as John Aldridge and Frank Roach Royals plough their own path to glory. Probably something to do with Owen Frayne. And then we have the story in the new section of the Sunday Independent. State funding's threat to FAI over delays into safeguarding probe. This is about allegations of bullying and harassment in Limerick. So I'm just going to read out this from Daniel McDonald and Mark Tai. The Football Association of Ireland has been warned that the sports minister will consider restricting state funding for football over concerns about the handling of complaints of bullying and harassment made against members of an amateur football committee in Limerick. Una May, Chief Executive of Sport Ireland, the body responsible for state funding of sporting bodies, wrote to David Correll, the FAI's CEO, on May the 30th to outline the threat to its state funding. On June the 5th, the FAI suspended the entire Limerick and District League committee, which runs amateur football in Limerick and North Tipperary. This was after Sport Ireland flagged concerns about the association's handling of complaints, and I quote here, sustained harassment and bullying in Limerick football. And further in the article, in the last month, the FAI has appointed RSM Ireland, a consultancy firm, to set out the terms of reference for a wide-ranging independent investigation that RSM will carry into the Limerick League. Sport Ireland statement said it acknowledges the initial steps taken by the FAI as a strong initial response. But a negative story about the FAI in the Sunday Papers today. And obviously that's not something they would want from a perspective of an organisation that wants to move on. We have lots of sports writing to go through. Meath and Donegal are probably the best place to start. Jackie, given you're from the county, and Philip, I suppose what I found interesting about the Meath Donegal coverage is, from a Meath perspective, when I was growing up, it was always about the big personalities they had, as not only as footballers but as identities. Colm O'Rourke, you know, Mick Lyons, Robbie O'Malley, Liam Hayes, Trevor Giles, Graeme Geraghty, Darren Fay, all these types of players.
Tommy O'Dowd, don't forget him, my favourite.
And who are the new players? Who are the new stars and the profiles that they have of these new players and who these people are in the papers? And the other thing about it, Donegal, is how, again, are Donegal in a position where deep into the All-Ireland Championship under the watch of Jim McGuinness and potentially All-Ireland winners again? So they're the kind of the two threads for me, the how with Donegal And then the people in Meath that have made Meath qualify for a first final in 16 years. Semi-final, that is. Not the final yet.
Yeah, well, listen, I think getting semi-final, no one would have predicted that at the start of the season after, I suppose, last year. You know, we had 2 years ago in the Tailteann Cup, Colin Rourke was in charge, and then last year just didn't go well. Hall of Meath were against Meath football at one point there, but I think Robbie Brennan's come in there, and all you ever hear from the camp is positivity, what he gives to the players, the confidence he gives to the players. And you saw that last week against Galway, you know, and the goalkeeper took 3 or 4 45s. I think he missed 2 or 3 of them, but still was given the confidence to go for them. And you can see that they're just playing with pure confidence, pure belief. And it's a really good game of football. Like, when we were chatting outside, like, they're genuinely playing old school football, getting the ball up to the forwards, moving the ball, taking chances. And I think the new rules have really helped me, the two pointers. Like, I think last game I was watching, they've 7 or 8 players throughout the season have scored the two pointers, and that makes a big difference. Like, you know, years ago, if it was a 3-point game, you were really struggling, but these two pointers make it really exciting. And I think Meath football is learning from it and getting Menton back into the game. He was a great ask to come back after a long serve into Meath football and probably never got really any sort of success out of it in his day when Dublin were so dominant. And then you have lads like Matt Coscolo and Jordy Morris up there scoring for fun. It's just been brilliant. And especially young Morris coming back from a horrific injury there against Louds. You know, I think it was 4 or 5 weeks back after what they thought was a year-ending injury.
It looked season-ending, yeah. Definitely. I remember watching that game and he went off, like, I think he went off with oxygen. He was stretched off. But like, it was, it looked... A broken leg, broken tibia. There was, wasn't it, ACL damage.
ACL, so
for
well, yeah.
Yeah, for him to be back on the pitch was remarkable. And I think if he was fit, arguably for the Leinster final, Meade would have said that might have gone differently. So like, he's obviously one of the stars of this show. And it was, you mentioned Brian Menton there. I was chatting to Brian during the league, and he kind of went how he came back with Conor Gillespie. The selector rang him. And he thought he was just ringing him to ask, can you tell us about the young talent in Dunamore Ashburn, not knowing that they actually wanted him to kind of come back. So he took a couple of years out, and it was even writing on Friday, like, it's remarkable that the semi-final brings two players. You've Brian Menton and Michael Murphy, who basically retired, finished their season, both pretty much left in tears. And me, that finished a couple of years ago, they were knocked out in a qualifier by Clare in a low-scoring game in a qualifier. Michael Murphy, Donegal were hammered that day by Armagh. He finished, drove home with his dad, put his gear bag in the boot of the car, didn't go home with the team bus, which he said is so not like him, like, he's the ultimate team player. And here you have two players, you know, in their mid-30s now, who are like their team talisman for their counties. So you have that mix of brilliant young players, Kieran Caulfield, who was Sigurd's Cup Player of the Year, guys like that mixed in with some of the old guards. So it has the makings of a great game, because, like as Jack said, Meath, they kick the ball, they're brave, they're aggressive in what they do. And I think Robbie Brennan deserves huge credit. Like, he's such a good guy. I don't know if you've had any dealings with him, John, but such a good guy to deal with. And if you have a chat, walk into a room with Robbie, you know, you come out feeling better, you know. So I know him going back to, we played against him underage with Kilmacud, and I knew him as a Kilmacud Crokes guy, not knowing that he's obviously proud Meath and his dad won a championship. Yeah. So his dad won a championship in Meath, and then actually when they moved to Dublin, he won a championship with St Anne's, and then Robbie won a championship with Crokes and went back, moved to Dunboyne, and won a championship with Meath as well. So it's kind of incredible personal story there. But he's so positive, you can see his stamp on the team all over. So.
What's the buzz been like?
Oh, you know, schools and clubs and county. It's just great to see where we are. You know, I'd be good friends there with Colin Brady as well. He's a local fellow for my club, and his daughter plays on my football team, and be chatting to his wife and stuff. And it's just great excitement. And the schools I went to, pictures up all week of ex-players and reminiscing. So, look, for us to get to an All-Ireland final would be phenomenal. Obviously, Donegal, they are an excellent team. Jim McGuinness, he's a mastermind of Gaelic football. You know, years ago he changed how Gaelic was played, and he seems to have got things going now with the new rules as well. He seems to have a good setup up there. So we won't count our chickens before they hatch, you know. But either way, I think Meath getting here is great for Meath football. I think the only thing we'd be disappointed about would be that Leinster final. I think, you know, had we won that Leinster final against Loud,
yeah,
it would have been, you know, the year already would have been a massive success. But look, we've beaten Kerry, we've beaten Dublin, we've beaten Galway. Now it's a big ask to beat Donegal. I think they, if they play the way they can play, they definitely could do it. But Donegal are a very, very talented, masterminded team by McGuinness. And as I said, Michael Murphy there is tallyman. I have a Donegal mother, so you know our house will be happy either way. But I suppose getting to an All-Ireland final, I think we have to remember that Mead ladies have been there for the last couple of years, so there's always been a bit of a buzz around it. But it is interesting as a female player. You see, obviously the county get behind the women, but it's on a bigger scale then when the men get there. So it's great for football in the county, great for underage football, great for kids getting involved and for clubs. So.
Joe Brody quote here in the Sun Independent, Jim McGuinness played a bit of basketball, but given their attacking yes. patterns, I'm certain Donegal have been using the services of a top-class basketball coach. The result is that they know how precisely how to unlock any defence, how to create the best possible shooting opportunity, which means they never take stupid shots, the greatest adrenaline boost for an opponent, and their scoring rate's remarkable. Then there's the sheer speed of their players from minute one to minute 70 and beyond, coupled with that memorable embrace of exhaustion that Eamon McGee has spoken about.
Well, I remember, I think, in terms of basketball, I think Sean Boylan back in the day used to have his players down in Gormanston and doing different things. And they were doing training underwater during with for injuries and different things. So, but you mentioned basketball and cross connection. Like Mark Gallagher has a piece here about the soccer connection with Donegal, yes. which is actually really interesting. You know, if you take Jim McGuinness, he said the first UEFA pro licence holder to manage at Intercounty. So Sean Patton, if today's game is going to boil down to one thing, it's probably going to be kickouts and the possession stats there. See, Kerry against Armagh wasn't 14 points in a row and did Armagh lose, 11 kickouts? Like in that period, was it 8 of 11? So, and that just dictates the whole game. So Sean Patton, Mark does a very kind of detailed profile about how he made the crossover, you know, from Finn Harps. He's played with Finn Harps, Derry City, Sligo Rovers, being brought into the Donegal squad. So to be, and if you see the array of his kicking now, most GA goalkeepers, they nearly have to have the kicking styles of that you'll watch in the Premier League with arrowed kickouts to the sideline rather than the old kick it as long kick contest. So, and Patton is absolutely, his game has, you can see how he's been moulded from a soccer background. So just as a really interesting piece just about Donegal have such a strong soccer connection. Obviously when you take Seamus Coleman and all the different people who probably would have been playing at the weekend. So so that's one of the pieces as well in terms of crossovers.
Yeah, Dermot Crowe has a piece as well, kind of profiling Meath and the, I suppose, the veterans like Brian Menton and Donald Kilgan, but also the players that have come into the picture as well. And the like Sean Rafferty, for example, the fullback. So Jordan Morris, just going through everything here. Like back to whatever, 2011, when Brian Menton made his championship debut against Kildare, the day Graham Geraghty came out of retirement to play was 14 years ago.
Yeah, and actually Chrissy O'Connor has an interesting piece, and he mentions the quote from Darren Fay. I did the Four Kings book with Darren Fay and the fullbacks, but Darren Fay said the day that Meath football and arrogance crept in was the 0-1 semi-final when they hammered Kerry. And actually, we were chatting about this at the weekend. I was there with my wife, my brother-in-law came over from England and he turned into a big Meath fan, and we were all at the match. I was there sitting beside them as the Olays were going up in the stand. We were in the upper Cusack. And that was the day Darren Fay identified that, he said, a kind of bit of arrogance crept in, because you'd never see Meath fans doing Olays at a match. And typically they went out in the final, and that's famously Pádraig Joyce ran right, scored 10 points. And since then, Meath haven't been back in an All-Ireland final. So it's incredible to think that moment when it looked like Meath were going to be around and in finals for a long time, that kind of things changed so dramatically.
Tommy Conn writing in the Sun Independent, will be hell for leather in contrast of styles. Hard-running Donegal look set to make hay in the Croke Park sunshine. Michael Murphy will be 36 next month. It'll be hard going even for this mentality monster. And we've got Kerry into a final, obviously now against Meath or Donegal. Eamon Sweeney back at the Sun Independent. Fake news leaves all blackguarded. That's a real old school Irish word, isn't it? The fiasco at the end of last Sunday semi-final, this in the hurling, was one of the most embarrassing episodes in Irish sporting history. This is the Kilkenny Tipperary scoreboard row. So I'm just going to read out a bit about it here. An hour after the game ended, the GA website was still giving the scores. Tipperary 421, Kilkenny 30 points. James Owens, the referee, had recorded this as the score. Puzzle journalists, not sure what to put on their match reports, were told emphatically that this was the correct score. At 6:50 p.m., Owens confirmed by text with journalists This is the official score. Around 10 minutes later, Owen said that Tip had actually won by 420 to 30 points, not 421 to 30. It was another 45 minutes before the GA eventually responded to media inquiries and confirmed the correct scoreline. I quote, "The GA acknowledges that there was confusion over the final score," said a remarkably terse statement. "There was no confusion. Journalists knew the score. They just wanted the GA to admit it." You were there, Philip.
Yeah, it was so chaotic. Again, you think you've seen it all covering live sport. And I've been at matches where the scoreboard has been wrong and just corrected maybe 30 seconds later. But I was sitting beside Kevin Egan, and Kevin Egan went to his almost immediately, said, "I think that's wrong." And we checked back, and I had Noel McGrath down, and we had question mark because an umpire, when you watch the video back, the chain of circumstances is just remarkable. Noel McGrath had a shot from the Cusack stand sideline and it went wide. But the umpire, if you look back in slow-mo, the umpire, the ball bounces off this netting and he puts his left hand up and makes a brilliant catch. So he catches the slitter in his left hand, but by raising his hand, we looked up. When you're in the press box, everything's happened. You just see an arm go up around. Loads of people thought he was waving a point. Meanwhile, on the other side, the other umpire is waving it wide. So plenty of people who were watching might have just caught.
Do you need to raise a flag?
Of course you do. But you think, how did this happen then? I'm only guessing because, and here's where Eamon has a very good point in a way. Like this GA said there was going to be an investigation into it, but we've heard nothing. There's been no official statement, no explanation, no apology. But what everybody was thinking at the time was that the fourth official must have looked up or seen the hand go up and just, no more than all the rest of us, kind of quick totted a score. But how nobody in the ground or in the match teams, even from Kilkenny, and I know it's not really on Derek Ling as such, but you would think whether even the players, when this happens in a match, someone will shout, you know, "Jack, John, the scoreline's wrong." And clearly, if they'd got a message to the fourth official, you know, there could have been pressure put on there. So it's incredible that nobody really made a quick intervention. And the whole idea, if Robert Doyle hadn't stopped the shot at the end, it would have been carnage, absolute carnage, because Kilkenny would have effectively, but they would have won the game, but the match would have ended.
But
with
how long would it have taken to find that out?
Yeah. So
I was at the Clare Offaly game in 1998 in the hurling semi final, and Clare, and I'll never be dissuaded from this, we were going to win the game. They were 3 points up, and Jimmy McCooney made a mistake. Mm-hmm. And look, we can all make mistakes, there's no problem with that. He blew up early, and there was a replay, and Offaly won the replay. But then you had these things brought in where additional time, they put up the board 3 minutes, 2 minutes, and now in football they've got this great hooter. There's no ambiguity about when the match is going to finish now. How can there not be a triple lock around the scoreboard, human error around the scoreboard, and then coordination between the umpires and the referee and the people who operate the scoreboards, so that this is right and this never happens again, and there's a triple lock, a quadruple lock? Because I'm seeing all the revenue the GA is making, millions in revenue, gate receipts, commercial revenue, all these adverts, and the most basic thing in the world in any sporting event, down to when you're a 5-year-old, is to get the score right. How did this fall through the cracks, and how can it be averted in the future, I suppose, is the thing. Because Kilkenny are not the kind of county to complain, but as you say, I think Tipperary deserved to win the game. But that isn't in a way mute, because we still want the rules to be completely 1,000% correct. So,
But Kilkenny were within their rights in a way to try their arm at this, to throw the book at it, to go appeal DRA. And especially when Brian Gavin, an interesting piece almost straight away in the Examiner, where he said he can access the referee's hub and the wrong scoreline went up. Now, we would have presumed that James Owens, the match referee, clearly didn't write down the score, because it clearly wasn't a point, wasn't waved as a point. So how could his scoreline be wrong? So was he
influenced by
a conversation post-match? So there's all that. So you're into the appeal. So Kilkenny, it's not their nature, and you know they've been very good about it, but they were within their rights to try their arm at this. But and the fact that I do think the least everybody involved deserved is an explanation from Croke Park. And I'm just really surprised. I was down heading to Cork that on Monday for the Cork All-Ireland press night, and a message drops in the afternoon saying Tipperary are having their All-Ireland final press conference. So obviously maybe their private conversations.
Well, they're having it because on the field of play they won by 2 points.
Yes. So
that's where they're having it. I mean, so it was pretty clear at the, like I was presenting last week, at the end of the evening, it's pretty clear that Tipperary won the game, whether they won it by three or by two. The issue is that Kilkenny's knowledge of what was going on might have been skewed.
Also, how they played that last 10, 20 minutes of the game. 10 minutes. Like, I read the article and I said, like, they had five chances for points, but they went for goals. Now, obviously, he took your 5 points, he still would have won. But it does change how you play a game if you're chasing a game by 2 points or 3 points. So I do think the big thing is, like, and I suppose it's, they acknowledged it, but there's no apology coming out there. That's interesting enough. Like, we acknowledge there was a mistake made, but we're not saying we apologise for it. And in fairness to Tipperary, or to Kilkenny, you said they aren't a team that are going to complain or give out about it.
Well, it's just what can they do? How can they triple lock or quadruple lock?
But as you said, there's umpires, lines people there. Like,
there is a triple lock, as it is.
There's already a lock there. Like, so I don't know how a message wasn't transferred.
But everybody's mic'd up. The old days of, you know, you can't hear it in Croke Park. Like, the referees, the line umpires are going, like, they're mic'd up, so you have a fourth official whose job is to actually do that.
Why couldn't they just, as Eamon said in the piece here, just stopped it for a few minutes and try to get...
Sorry, John, the crazy thing was, though, the match actually stopped in that moment because I went back and watched it frame by frame for the last 10 minutes. So after the wrong scoreline was put, there was a substitution made. So the match stopped for 20, 30 seconds. So even there was actually the perfect time for somebody to kind of go, right, we need to check that. And how it didn't happen, there's definitely a freak element to how it all happened with nobody kind of saying, here, lad. Because again, I think if you saw, there was a brilliant live clip of Marty Morrissey and John Milan even doing the commentary. But behind them, you could see Shane McGrath and they were querying. You can see them questioning it, even in the live clip, kind of going, that scoreline's wrong. So there was plenty, not that they'd ever asked the press box, but there was plenty of people and sitting there who could have said, yeah, there's an issue here. So
yeah, it can't be repeated, to be honest.
The lock is there, it just wasn't new. There's
always a worry, a group think in these situations, oh, we'll just settle on something and then, oh, I'll actually be to acknowledge that it was wrong.